Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of T&J Radio. Glad to be back here with you. We took a week off last week, and but we're right back at it. Really happy to be here, back in the building with my man, Jay Wells. What's good, brother?
How's it going, bro? Good afternoon, kings and queens. I hope everyone's having a great week.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. Good to be back with you on this beautiful, sunny afternoon in Michigan, actually. We got the sun came, the sun finally started coming back out here. So when the sun comes out, make you feel a little better, man. So I'm glad that we got the sun going out here. And
that melanin, man.
I know, man. So it's all good. I feel feel good about that. Well, back once again, everybody, T&J Radio, once again, thanks for tuning in. Solution-based radio, you already know what time it is. You know, me and my main man, Jay Wells, talking about all the most pertinent issues facing the African-American community, but most importantly, solutions to couple those issues. When you tune in to T&J Radio, we're not just talking about problems. We're talking about solutions for those problems. Not only solutions, but solutions that you can actually implement right now, that you could, pull out of your back pocket right now and cash in and make happen. And so that's what we're talking about today, tomorrow, and always. We had a few things actually planned for this week that we were going to talk about, and I think we will be able to get into that at some point today. But I don't know if it was Monday or Tuesday. Today is Wednesday, so it had to be Monday, this video, or Sunday night, one of them, whatever the case may be, this video surfaced from the University of Oklahoma with the fraternity, the University of Oklahoma obviously being a predominantly white university, and this video surfaced of Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity at the University of Oklahoma, or Oklahoma University, OU. And it was extremely disturbing, but not surprising. And it was essentially, and you can look it up on YouTube if you just type in Sigma Alpha Epsilon video if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about. But it was a group of fraternity brothers and their girlfriends or dates riding what appeared to be a bus, and they broke into a racist chant, and the bulk of what you could get out of it was there will never be a N-I-G-G-E-R in S-A-E, and then something will hang them from a tree. But it was just absolutely crazy. Everybody on the bus knew the song, and what was crazy to me, because it wasn't surprising, because I expect that, and I'm just being completely forthright. I expect that. But what was crazy to me was not only were the guys singing it, but their dates were singing it. Like the women that aren't in the fraternity, because women, if you're not aware, women can't join fraternities. They join sororities. But they knew the song, and they were chanting and kind of singing along with it. And so it sparked this national outrage. Everybody was kind of going crazy, like, I can't believe this is actually going on, and yada, yada, yada. And so it was kind of a big deal, and we felt like this was something that we had to dive into. We had to talk about, the state of that type of situation, the state of racial really balance when it comes to these types of groups on college campuses. Also, what the expectations are when it comes to black folks and white folks. I mean, are you surprised when this actually happened? I know back when I went to Central Michigan University in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, which is extremely rural for folks who aren't familiar, and that type of stuff went on all the time. But before I jump into my stories on this, Wells, when you first saw the video and or heard the video, however you were exposed to it, what were your thoughts and how did you receive it?
Bro, when I say again, we both went to predominantly white universities. So let's just put that out there. So this is, and just being in the on the fraternity scene and seeing how people move, this was no shock. You know, this was like not a surprise to me whatsoever. But at the same time, it made me think about how long they've been doing this. And I always say, man, if when you have a girl around, if she's your girl, she picks up some of your lingo, things that you do. That's how you know she's your girl. If you have certain words you use, your girl adopts those words. Those are just little things that happen. And as easily and as cheerfully the girls that were with these dudes were singing the song, that just shows you right there. This is not the first time this has occurred. This was something that they've been doing for as long as they've been in college. And so when it first happened, I said, I got to check this out. I was like, I got to do a little research on this. And CBS News had a really good article on it, and it kind of went through this fraternity. And when I start telling you about a couple of these things, you'll realize you've heard, they've been in the news before. Like, this is the same fraternity that threw the Christmas party. I don't know if people remember this last Christmas, during Christmas 2014, the Clemson University fraternity that threw the gang-themed Christmas party. This was all over Instagram, all over Twitter. They had the guys and the girls dressed up like so-called hip-hop artists doing gangster stuff. And this was really big on social media. And then just looking through the article, in February 2013, Washington University in St. Louis suspended its chapter while investigating claims that pledges and gangs engaged in racially offensive behavior towards minorities. And going back to 2006, the University of Memphis chapter was investigated after a freshman complained that his fraternity brothers made inappropriate remarks to and about his black girlfriend. After that, two members of the fraternity had been suspended from the university. So this isn't something new to this organization, and this is an organization that, to a certain extent, breeds this type of behavior. It's accepted by them. And also in the CBS News article, they also touched on something that also shed some light onto the culture of this organization. They were founded in 1856 in Alabama, and within that, they have songs and fraternity in their songbook that talks about being raised in Dixieland. So it kind of shows you the mentality that they've been bred from and the type of people that kind of created and built this organization. So, again, it's one of those things that it's you can't even call it infuriating because you're not surprised. It's kind of just like we need to get to the point where you're almost, it's unfortunate, but to the point where you're just numb to these kind of things. And this particular organization, they have been the ultimate repeat offender. So it's only fitting that they shut down the OU chapter. And just following up with the OU, people are kind of making a big stink about, not necessarily making a big stink, but giving them praise for their head coaches and team and athletes and these people just kind of gravitating towards this cause. I mean, this is an easy cause to get behind. You look at the coaches, Bob Stoops and Lon Kruger, they're out supporting their players at this event. I mean, yeah, it's good that they're supporting their players, but at the same time, they have a big interest in making sure they don't lose black athletes. You know what I mean? It's like, so they have a lot to lose with this kind of situation going on at their campus. And it just reminds me, man, it's like, how can you go to a university where things like this can happen so freely and easily? It's like, it almost makes me think about like the University of Mississippi, like right after Obama was reelected. After the president was reelected, they had people burning crosses, nooses out. They were like hanging fake dummies, all types of craziness. But again, it's one of those things where it's not surprising. But at the same time, man, it's just like another one of those quick reality checks of what America really has going on.
Yeah, man, I agree. And you know what was the first thing that came to my mind? And I keep it extra funky with everybody, man. I feel like I'm genuinely a humanitarian. I love all people, and I cling to that. But I'm also a realist, and so when I say that, like, I'm a straight shooter. I will not hold punches with you, and I will be completely honest with you. And so in saying that, when I first saw this, the first thing that came to my mind was, first, I'm not surprised, and secondly, and most importantly, these people are the same people that come in your face, shake your hand, say hi, act like everything is all good, and then behind closed doors feel this way about you just because of the color of your skin. And back in the realm of straight shooting, like I just talked about, I absolutely unequivocally feel that black folks, and I'm saying predominantly as a whole, black people do not act in this manner, meaning we don't harbor these same types of feelings towards other groups, in particular white folks, who we have all the feeling or all the, you know, we should or have reason. We have reason to feel this way towards them, but we don't, right? So we don't harbor these feelings towards them, but for one reason or another, they do towards us. And I, you know, when I see videos like this, it brings that point home for me where I genuinely feel, and I work with, you know, mostly all white folks, you know, and I'm practically around white folks all day, every day, except when I'm around my family and, you know, friends, my circle. But I don't trust the people that I'm around because of videos like this. You can only literally trust them so much, right? Like, you feel like, all right, is this person really cool with me? Or do they have a little sigma, alpha, epsilon in them? You know what I'm saying? Like, are we legit to the point to where they have to be cordial with me, just like these students have to be cordial with the black students and the other students of color that they encounter on campus? But since they use the N-word, I'm keeping this in the realm of black people because they aren't referring to other races with that slur. So are they really cool with you when you're on campus, or do they have a little SAE in them? And so that's really a legit concern for me. You really have to think about this on a daily basis. How do these people really feel about you? How do they really view you? And that video kind of, it didn't do anything extra for me, but it kind of just brought that thought back into my head where I thought, man, it's so tough for black folks where you feel like I'm sitting in a class or I'm sitting somewhere next to this person, and then this is what I think they feel about me, but this is actually what they feel about me. And furthermore, the saddest part about it is these people are young. I mean, these are college students.
Yeah.
These are college
these
students.
These dudes are,
you know, these
no, they
are
weren't even
like
grad students. These guys were
right.
Like 18
these
to like
were like
22.
Undergrads. Yeah, like super undergrads, right? So these are the kids that are going to be leading this country someday. These are might be the next wave of Democrats, Republicans, Tea Party folks, whatever, leaders of this country, and this is what they're thinking. And so that's really one of the most dangerous, I think, things that came out of that video for me when I really look at it, and it's, you know, when I look at it holistically, when I look at it in its totality and take it off of that surface chant and look at, you know, these people are in college, so they're going to receive a degree, they're going to get jobs, and they have these feelings that they're harboring towards black folks, which you know is going to carry over into their work lives, which is going to mean less jobs for black folks, less opportunities, and all those types of things. And so that was what kind of stood out to me as I dissected it a little more.
And again, the more you look at it, man, it's more unfortunate than anything else, because when you think about it, it's easy to kind of get to the mind frame, like what you mentioned, like, can I trust this person's friendship? Like, is that a real friend? You know what I mean? Like, is this a guy that I can really, like, yeah, we go to class together, but I wonder how he talks about me when I'm not eating lunch with him. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's like it creates that environment. And it's like, no, like, this is going to sound really messed up, but it's like I have white friends. I have guys that I was like, you know, that's my friend. That's a guy that I've known for X amount of years. We've hung out. We've kicked it. Our friends, family know each other. It's a mutual friendship. You know what I mean? It's like, but you're right to a certain extent. It's like you wonder how you are. It's like videos like this make you question things that you would normally question if you were dealing with another minority. It's like, mm-hmm. It's really unfortunate. And of all people, black people, we aren't in a position, we don't have anything to be racist. You know what I mean? It's like Claude Anderson always says, you have to have something to keep people away from to be a racist. You know what I'm
right,
saying?
You can't
alienate people if you don't have anything. So we're the last people to actually be in a position to be considered racist. And if you disagree, please let me know, because it doesn't make sense. It's like, so it's hard to say black people are racist towards anyone, because, again, we don't have anything. But when you go into the thought of, yo, I don't, like, yeah, this guy's my boss, but it's like it turns into, like, let's say your boss is white, and you're supposed to have some kind of relationship, some kind of rapport with that person. It's like, it's already there, your boss, but now you're thinking, like, oh, man, what else is he really saying? And it creates an environment where you can't trust someone that should be offering you assistance on a day-to-day basis. It's really unfortunate. That's the best way to describe it. It's one of those things where it's like, no matter what you do, how can you separate yourself from being labeled this way, or what can you do to make someone realize, like, yo, there's so much more to me than that. Like, are they just that ignorant? Or are they just that blinded? Like, what do you think that is? Do you think it's just an ignorance thing, or do you think it's just like that's been ingrained in them?
I think that's a good question. And if you all want to join in the conversation here, please feel free to join us right here on TNK Radio, talking about the Sigma Alpha Epsilon saga that's going on right now. 347-324-5360, 347-324-5360, if you want to get in on the conversation right here on TNJ Radio, Solution-Based Radio. You know what, Wells, I think it starts at home. I think that the difference, and I don't mind generalizing, because I think generalizations are based in truth, and I think that, are all generalizations true? Absolutely not. I mean, does everybody fall into the category? No. But a generalization, to me, oftentimes is like a good joke, right? It's based in truth. So a joke is only funny because it has some truth based in it. If it wasn't based in truth, then you wouldn't laugh. And I think that the difference, so now I'm going to go back and kind of back up to see how do these kids get to this point to where they are even receptive to this type of message and willing to spew it. So black kids from our inception, and this goes back to kind of what you were talking about with Dr. Claude Anderson, where we can't be racist. In order to be racist, you have to have power. If you don't have power and resources, you cannot be racist, because you have to be able to control power and resources in order to be racist. That's how the racist system continues to prosper, because white folks have the power and they have the resources. You combine power and resources, that's a dangerous cocktail. So from the time that black folks are young, we are always taught how to act around white people, how to treat white people, how to move in those circles. You know, your parents might say, when you get around white folks, don't do this because they might treat you like this, or, you know, do certain things. And I don't want to, like, give examples because I don't want to super stereotype, but your parents talk to you, or family members, or whoever raised you, talk to you from a young age how to deal with white people, and it's always in a respectful, fearful manner. So they tell you from the giddy-up that this is a force to be reckoned with, and you have to respect the G that comes along with that. And that becomes a part of your psyche. And when it comes to white folks in that same instance, they are teaching their kids, back black folks, to have that same healthy fear slash respect or whatever you want to call it. They're teaching them that they're powerful, that they're going to run this country, that they're going to essentially run this group of people based on past, based on the past experiences that they've had in this country of being rich and powerful and controlling the resources and having the power. And so that's what they're embedding in their kids. So when their kids come in contact with, now look how this happens. This kid that's been taught to have the power and the resources and not to necessarily respect this other group, and then all the other outside influences that are telling them that, TV, media, and everything else, come in contact with this group of folks that have been taught to fear and respect this other group, come in contact with each other. It's a dangerous mix, which almost always ends up with black folks on the bottom feeling like they aren't equal and they are on the same level as white folks, and their white folks already having that inherent privilege type of thought based on what they were taught. And that's how the cycle continues. And then next thing you know, you have a bus full of folks yelling, there'll never be an N-word in SAE. So I think, like, I mean, does that make sense? But I feel like that's kind of how it comes together from youth to adulthood.
It's a form of whitewashing almost. It's like we've been preconditioned to take the submissive or the back road anyway. You know what I'm saying? And it's one of those things where generationally it's been ingrained in us and we've kind of accepted it. And it's not kind of accepted, we have accepted it. And it's extremely unfortunate. And it just makes me think about something, man. I'm a Netflix lover, man. One of my favorite shows restarted this past season, House of Cards. And not to get all the way into the show, this is guy Freddie. Freddie had some tough breaks, some shady things went down. Freddie lost his business. Freddie has a grandson. Freddie is friends with the president. Well, to a certain extent, he's friends with the president. And the president helps Freddie get a job working in landscaping at the White House. Freddie's grandson comes with his grandfather to the White House. He introduced him to the president. The president, which is a white man on the show, says, that could be your seat one day. This is something that you can aspire to, something of that nature. As they're walking out, Freddie, as an older black man, has experienced failure and letdown at different stages throughout his life, immediately tells his grandson, right after his grandson walks out of the Oval Office, his grandson walks out and says, oh, man, that could be me one day. His grandfather looks at him and says, no, it can't. You need to get that kind of dream. It's okay to dream, but those are the type of dreams you should have. It's kind of like he's trying to protect his grandson from being disappointed in life, but at the same time, he's putting his grandson in a subservient role, putting a cap on him, kind of putting him in a mindset where, hey, you can never do that. Don't even think about it. Don't do it. And one of the things I like about the show is that it's very real on many levels, but like that particular scene was kind of like, damn, how many times have I seen that? How many times have I heard that before? You know, it makes you think about different scenarios in life where you've seen friends or family members kind of get whitewashed into thinking they can't be more than what they are. And when it comes to that, it goes back to like what you were mentioning, like these kids, these white kids are raised to believe that. They're raised to believe that, hey, I'm the leader. If I do these things, these people will work for me. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of scenario that we have to eliminate, like generationally, culturally. It's just one of those things we have to remove from our makeup. It's like there's no reason you can't do whatever you want. Well, there's reasons, but the thing is you can control a lot more situations than your ancestors ever could. You're in a lot more control than they were, and we have to shake that kind of negativity. Like, I'm really big on energy, and to me that's just like a loser mentality that so many of us were kind of raised with, like that low expectations, that lack of confidence, that lack of real confidence kind of thing, and that just kind of, that personally infuriates me. But those are the type of things we have to get away from, because success really does breed success. And when you're ingraining that into your child at a young age, it can go, it can create a situation where, hey, they truly believe they can do whatever they want. And in this particular situation, bringing that back to the SAE situation, these kids were not afraid of the consequences. That's why they do stuff like this. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure someone posted the video on the web thinking it was funny, if I'm not mistaken. And it was funny today, just kind of breezing through the internet, looking at the kind of fake apologies that people were putting out. And it's like the one guy, what was it? He said he apologized for the incident, and he immediately went on to talking about, yeah, we can't even stay in our home anymore because of threatening phone calls and all this other stuff. Like, yeah, you feel sorry after the fact. You know, it's like it's an after-the-fact situation. You don't, you're not apologizing for what you did because you guys were enjoying the song. And another one of the guys is talking about he apologizes, and it was fueled by alcohol. And I'm pretty sure we've all heard the saying, a drunk mind, what was that, a drunk mind speaks sober thoughts or something like that. Mm-hmm. But whatever, it's like, but it's like that's kind of what happened in the situation, man. It's like we have to kind of address these things and create more dialogue, because when in these situations, you really want to kind of get an understanding. It's like, who is this person really? You know, it's like, is this the type of person that really believes these things, or are these kids just singing a song? Like, do you think this was a situation where kids were just singing a song, or is this who these people really are? Because it's hard for me to believe that somebody, like you, at this point in your life, being 18 years old, you know right from wrong. You know what I mean? So you can't be a kid just singing a song. You had to have some feeling into this. And if you watch the video again, they were very emphatic in what they said. This wasn't like...
That wasn't a kid singing a song.
Yeah, this wasn't a church hymn where your grandmother's leading the church and you singing the song. No, this was emphatic. They meant every word of that. And so it was just one of those things, man. It's like, it's really hard to feel any kind of pity for what these young men are going through.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel bad for them at all. I just keep it all the way funky on that. But what I, you know what I'm saying, what I will do is, and we could go all day on this, but we do have some more stuff that we wanted to talk about. So, but we, you know, like I said, we are solution-based radio, and I want to share a quick story, and then, like, we can jump into our solutions for this. And then the second half of the show is kind of, it's along the same lines, but it's not actually, because it's really looking at the treatment between white folks and black folks when it comes to how two different people will go through the same experience, but how the white guy gets the, oh, shucks, he just had a rough time and, you know, let's take care of him, versus how the black dude gets the, oh, man, he, you know, throw him to the wolves type of treatment. So you want to stick around for that, definitely. But to kind of wrap up the conversation on Sigma Alpha Epsilon, when I was at Central Michigan University and we were walking through the kind of little main street area where the frat houses are, man, we would get massive N-bombs dropped on us walking through there. Like, and obviously it was cowardly acts from people standing up on, you know, all of these frat houses and just yelling stuff out. I mean, of course they didn't have the guts to do it alone and, you know, when they weren't with their buddies or whatever. But so this is nothing new to me, and I understand it. I don't like it, but I understand it. And it's something that's been going on for a long time. And it's one of those things where, and I said that because it's one of those things that it's really hard to create a solution for this. I mean, you know, and the solution that I would pose is not anything spectacular. It's actually really simple, but it's key. And to me, it's for black folks to not join these groups, period. I mean, it makes no sense. Like, why would you join these groups? Why would African-American male join a white fraternity, knowing the history of these groups. Like, it was different when white folks joined historically black organizations, because our vibe and our energy is not to hate. Our vibe and energy is inclusion. You're joining groups that have histories of exclusion. It makes absolutely no sense. And CNN trotted out some Negro from a SAE chapter somewhere, and he was talking about, oh, my brothers love me, and, you know, this isn't regular behavior. And, you know, they trotted him out there for, you know, on some coon status and what have you. But my solution is simple. Look, man, why would you join a group that's based on exclusion, and in particular exclusion of folks that look like you? So point blank period, don't join these fraternities. Go join groups that have your best interests at heart, and clearly these organizations aren't them.
I couldn't agree more, man. It's like they trotted that brother out on CNN, man. He was looking like the cop in Ferguson. Like, they just found the one black dude they could find and
right.
put him on TV. I couldn't believe that when I saw that, man. I was like, come on, bro.
I felt bad for him. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, he sold his soul for that one.
But
no, my solution for this, it's something pretty simple. Because, again, like, this isn't, like, something that's an easy solution to find. But I really think, with these situations, and I think for a lot of things race-related, is finding real dialogue. We need to create environments where people are comfortable speaking to each other and trying to address these things, because a lot of white people are raised one way, but that doesn't – they're raised one way, but at the same time, you don't want to let the way someone was raised define them, just like a black person doesn't want to allow the way they were raised to define them either. You know, just because you were raised in a certain situation, that doesn't mean that's all you can be. So I'm a fan of dialogue. And if we could create positive dialogues, again, positive dialogue, not attacks like you see on television, it's like you need to find real dialogues where people can discuss these things and try to find out why you feel this way, or what negative images have you seen? What negative images have you seen that have made you believe black people are this or that? And if we create those kind of environments where people can actually learn instead of just being told what to think, if they actually kind of learn what to think and learn how to address and deal with others, that'll go a long way.
Yeah, I agree, man. That's a great solution. And, you know, really healthy dialogue on the Sigma Alpha Epsilon saga that's going on. And hopefully, you know, there is something positive that comes from this, from such a, you know, a really, I guess, ugly situation. The remainder of the show, excuse me, will be dedicated to talking about, you know, the unequal treatment between races. And in this instance, a few weeks ago, there was, so let me set the stage for you, because this is really interesting. And if you want to get in touch with us, the chat window is open. So if you want to chat with, you are at your computer, and you have a question or you just want to comment, feel free to jump in and chat with us. We'll, you know, answer your questions or get your questions out over the air. Or if you want to call in, 347-324-5360, and we'll get you on air. The second session is really interesting because there is a brother named Josh Gordon that plays for the Cleveland Browns, which is the NFL football team, and he had been going through some crazy substance abuse issues, you know, where he was risking his career. He was doing lean and smoking weed and drinking, and he was just doing a lot of stuff that kept getting him suspended from games and costing him money. But the dialogue on ESPN and the media outlets and the radio was, Josh Gordon is an idiot. Why is he ruining his career? You know, he's blowing his money. You know, he's doing this, he's doing that. And he was just getting destroyed and continues to get destroyed for making these decisions. And Josh Gordon is a black male. And fast forward, there's a guy named Josh Hamilton, who is a Major League Baseball player. And we are, Wales and I are extremely sensitive to substance abuse issues because we've both seen them up close and personal and know that substance abuse is absolutely no joke. And so we take that stuff absolutely seriously. It's no joke. And so this is not a joking manner for us, and that's why we had to address it. But the way it's viewed between the two races is skewed absolutely horribly. But Josh Hamilton, the Major League Baseball player, a white athlete, had signed a contract a couple years ago for over $100 million, and he has a drug problem. And I want to say it's either cocaine or heroin. It's one of them, and he has been, and it's alcohol too. And he relapsed, and then he relapsed on alcohol, and then he got in trouble. And then recently he relapsed on the cocaine or heroin. I forget which one it is. But the narrative around Josh Hamilton was, oh, man, we need to figure out how to get Josh Hamilton some help. You know, he's risking his life. He's going down this downward spiral, but we need to make sure that he stays around the team so that he doesn't, you know, mess around and kill himself or fall into a deeper drug addiction. The narrative around him was completely different versus the narrative around Josh Gordon, which brought the question to us. This is a common theme when black folks and white folks kind of commit the same atrocities or mistakes. The way that it's viewed is completely different. You know, the brother gets this treatment or the sister gets this treatment like, oh, man, he or she is the absolute idiot. They're wasting their lives. They're not worthy of, being rehabilitated. And then this other white cat gets this treatment of, oh, man, we need to save him or her. And so that's something that we kind of wanted to really address because it's extremely important. So if you want to jump in the chat window to, you know, throw something at us on that, feel free to do so. But, Wells, when you think about that in those two situations, because we talked about this off air, how did that strike you and what do you feel about that?
First, it hurts, man, because, again, personally dealing with the people very close to me that have had to deal with substance issues, it's kind of unfortunate because – With these situations, first, both of these guys need help. They both need support systems. And clearly, these people have done something where they felt something in their hearts that took them to go down that route. And not trying to justify the substances, but you look at Josh Hamilton, man. He was shooting cocaine. These are needles. You know, he's shooting cocaine. And he had a real problem. And people kind of saw that and they just immediately wanted to help him. And it's not really fair for them to look at him as I hate to try to justify it, but cocaine is a much more harder drug than Josh Gordon smoking weed. You know what I mean? It's like, and again, none of the addictions are good, but you can't try to make one seem better than the other. And I think that's what the media started to do. Like, because Josh Hamilton was on something stronger, he needed more of a support system. He needs to be in the family atmosphere of the team kind of situation. And essentially, people were on television talking like Josh Gordon should never get another opportunity. That should be the end of his career. He needs to go take care of himself. He needs to go find himself kind of thing. And that's just really – it's really unfortunate, man, because both of these guys, nothing would benefit both of these guys more than being around the team. Being around the business atmosphere that is the NFL or Major League Baseball. Like, that kind of structure is the only thing that can really kind of help break those kind of moments where people feel weak enough or they need to find some kind of narcotic or whatever it may be. And it's really one of those things where we need to try to do a better job of creating an environment where we can kind of embrace and support each other because we can't count on other people doing it for us. And I think within the black community, we've kind of alienated a lot of people into making them think that they are just, like, they can't be saved or they can't be helped, when in actuality, they just need that kind of comfort because there's nothing worse than the feeling that goes with watching someone that you care about or someone that you love kind of just throw their life away. You know what I mean? It's like that's something that's really unfortunate and it's hard to see. So it's like when you think about a brother like Josh Gordon, this dude can't be more than, what, 23, 24? And you see the situations that he's in, how can you not feel bad for him? It's like people feel like it's wrong to feel something for him, like he should be in jail or something like that. And it's like they're too busy crucifying the kid instead of trying to help the kid, which is just really unfortunate.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting because and, you know, the comparison between the drugs is really interesting, only because I think addiction is addiction. And, you know, I don't care what you're on. It doesn't matter. You know, addiction is addiction, and it's nothing to play with. And but the distinction that I want to make is how they linked, and it's a race thing, because they linked Josh Gordon with lean, which is, you know, the codeine and Sprite mix that hip-hop uses or is affiliated with hip-hoppers or whatever. And folks have actually become extremely addicted to. Folks have died from, because you develop, you know, sleep apnea and all type of illnesses from, you know, drinking that codeine on a regular basis. And so, but what happened was they linked Josh Gordon with this thing that is affiliated with black people, which is lean, which made his addiction almost worse in the public eye, because it's like, oh, man, he's doing this dumb hip-hop, you know, fad. And so the way that it was viewed because of what it was linked to made his act almost even less important and made him less of a redeemable person / soul. Whereas Josh Hamilton had been involved with a drug that's commonly known to white America, because they have family members that struggle with cocaine and or heroin. And so that's something that's easily identifiable with them. And so when they hear that, it instantly clicks, like, oh, I know what that is. That's easy to identify with. And it made it a lot easier for folks to get on his side and want help for him. Whereas with Josh Gordon, it just wasn't there. And I really think it was because that link was made because, one, he was a young black male, and two, because it was that link between something that is an unknown to that community, being the white community. And you don't really hear about, you know, white kids or white athletes or famous people using lean. You know, you hear them, you know, overdosing on some really heavy stuff. But lean is just as addictive. It's just as deadly. And then you combine that with him using weed and alcohol, and the brother is in serious trouble. But I think that's where the true disconnect came, where the media started creating these two different stories between the two guys, and where Gordon instantly became demonized and he was a bad guy that wasn't salvageable. And then Hamilton was like this all-American type of guy that – and then this was another thing too, because Josh Hamilton, if you recall, had previously beat his drug addiction and came back and was like a feel-good story, right? So he had beat the drug addiction and then came back and actually performed really well and got that big contract and then kind of fell back into his addiction. And then that's how he had created that kind of all-American image, and then he fell back into his addiction. And then he all of a sudden has these redeemable qualities. So for me, it's these people over here are redeemable and saved and worthy of being saved, and then this group of folks over here aren't.
And you know what? That's pretty accurate. It's one of those things where if there's someone to cast aside, it's going to be the brother. You know what I mean? It goes back to something we talked about a few episodes back, is like where we stand on the food chain, you know? And it's really unfortunate, because when you think about it, it's an environment that kind of accepts failure from us, but doesn't want to see failure in anyone else. You know, it's like people talk about America being the land of second chances, but only for them and not for you. You know what I mean? It's like it's one of those things where society has made the decision already, and we need to go ahead and really just kind of just blow the lid off the box and kind of show them that we're better than that. Because it's unfortunate, because you think about the fact that someone like Josh, again, Josh Hamilton, he, if I'm not mistaken, when he first beat the addiction, I want to say that was almost like 10 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. And it became a feel-good story because he was one of those highly recruited, highly drafted baseball players that kind of got rich very quickly out of high school and immediately started doing drugs and pissing his money away. And then all of a sudden, someone got him clean. He beat the addiction, and things turned around for him. And as you can see, he had his relapse. So it's one of those things where it's like, it was easy to kind of see yourself and just try, like, you know, let's root for this guy. And it's like, it's really bad that society has accepted him but frowned upon, again, a guy like Josh Gordon. It's like, it also makes me think about, like, this is kind of like off the subject a little bit, but I'm not sure, Trav, if you remember this, man, this past summer, the video of the cop beating the black woman in California, I believe. Cop just got out, and it was one black woman. And he's just beating her face in on right outside of, I want to say it was like the, it was on a highway in California, like right on the side of the curb or something like that. And someone recorded it, but the cop decided that this one black woman warranted that type of attack. It was like, what about her made you not want to help her, but instead mm-hmm. attack her? It's mm-hmm. like, I'm pretty sure you walk up to any woman on the side of the road, she's probably going to be upset, black or white. You know what I mean? It's like, so no one's really going to be in a good space. So what would make your first thought to be, you know what, she's resisting arrest, I need to beat her. But instead of trying to subdue her or calm her down in a more polite manner, it's hard for me to believe if a white woman was in that situation, she would have been beaten in that manner for that long. And it's one of those things that it's like you don't always want to make everything a race thing, but so many different things are just a race thing. And it's like when you look at the Josh Gordon, Josh Hamilton situation, it's unfortunate, but that's a race thing.
Yeah, and it is. And another situation that's really similar to that is man, I really don't like plugging other people. Well, I guess it doesn't matter, but I don't like really sending people to other people's movies and stuff because I don't know if this is a platform for that. But at any rate, this is an excellent example, and I hope, you know, some of the listeners can check this out because it'll really frame it for you. Because, like, you don't look for this stuff. It finds you, and it really does. And so sometimes you feel like, well, you know, it's not about race. And you always want to feel like it's not about race, but a lot of the times it is, like you said, and it harkens back to James Baldwin when he said, you know, to be a Negro in this country and to be relatively conscious is to be in a state of rage almost all the time. And that's so fitting because if you are conscious or aware on any level, you can't help but notice these things. And so kind of what I was about to get to was there's this documentary on Netflix where, and it's called Informant, and Informant, like a person that tells. And it's about a guy who became a kind of right-wing FBI informant. And what he did was he set these kids up to go to the Republican National Convention. He set up some white kids to go to the Republican National Convention in, I want to say it was Denver. This was a few years ago. It might not have been in Denver. Maybe it was in Milwaukee somewhere. That, I guess that's irrelevant. But the point is, so he set them up and befriended them and kind of coaxed them into creating Molotov cocktails that they were going to use to throw at some some cop cars and things of that nature at the Republican National Convention a few years ago. Well, at this convention, what happens is hundreds of young white protesters end up running through the streets of this, and this documentary is on Netflix. It's streaming, so you can check it out. It's real. It actually happened. And hundreds of white kids, protesters, I'm doing air quotes here, run through the streets, tipping over cop cars, busting out windows of the cop cars, setting cop cars on fire, busting out the windows of businesses downtown in this city. And I wish I knew what city it was, but I can't recall because I watched it maybe a few months ago. But they burst out all the windows of businesses in this downtown metropolitan area, and just the cops watched and did absolutely nothing. And what was funny about it, they didn't call in a tank. They didn't call in the National Guard. There was no extra security called in terms of the police force. There was nothing. And these kids absolutely ran amok in a downtown of a metropolitan area. You can go check it out. And I was absolutely blown away because when I saw this, this was on the heels of everything that was going on in Ferguson. Now, you compare this to Ferguson. Now, that was a group of all-white youthful protesters. Now, you compare this to Ferguson where a young man was killed and all these people are doing is, you know, kind of peacefully protesting. You know, it was a little bit of chaotic stuff going on every now and again, but for the most part, it was all peaceful. There was no flipping over of police cars. There was no, you know, busting out windows like that for the most part. It was a little bit, but not really. It was primarily peaceful. But none of these kids were arrested. They were allowed to go free, and nothing happened. And I was furious because I'm like, had that been a group of black folks in at the Republican National Convention doing this, and they had Molotov cocktails on them too, like it would have been on and popping, bro. Like we would have had dudes going to jail, people would have been killed, it would have been absolutely insane. And so, right, and so I just think about that, and it's just this inherent, for whatever reason, situation going on to where, you know, white folks trust white folks to not take it to the next level, and they let them do what they do. And then if we ever come outside and try and stand up for ourselves, we get the type of treatment that we've been getting when we were in New York or in Ferguson or down in Florida when Trayvon Martin was going on and Jordan Davis and all that. And I find that absolutely appalling.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations, man, where we have to start holding them accountable for their actions. You know, it's like, we continue to vote for these people and empower these people that to make decisions for us that don't do anything for us. And that's how something like that continues to take place. We have to take more ownership in what we do and who we actually elect, because say what you want, man, but our vote does count. And it does go a long way, especially when you do it, when you participate in group politics, taking advantage of your community and everyone supporting the same people.
Yeah, I think that's a given right there. I was just thinking, I have so many instances of, you know, how this works. I was just thinking about how, the Oscars, you know, where your director can get nominated. I mean, your film can get nominated for best film or something like that, but then your director won't get a nomination and your actor won't get a nomination. But if you look at the other films, when the picture is nominated for best picture, they get nominated in virtually every category, right? So best actor, best supporting actor, best supporting actress, everything is nominations across the board. And it's just this really weird dynamic to where it's cool to, you know, treat two different people that have the same experience and have done the exact same thing, but one person gets a pat on the back and gets treated well, and then the other person kind of gets the shaft. And it's all based on, you know, the color of your skin. But then when I look at these things, I always take it, and I back to the Josh Hamilton and Josh Gordon thing, which all of this is still based in, I take it back to the lack of humanity, the inability to see the humanity in black folks. When people see Josh Gordon, they don't see Josh Gordon as a man, as a human, as a person with a family that loves him, who cares about him. When they see Josh Hamilton, they see that, and that's where the true difference lies. And until we can figure out a way to fix that, it's you know, it's going to be an issue. But with that being said, Wells, what solution would you pose for this situation here?
With all things considered, man, I've been thinking about the 50th anniversary of Selma was this past weekend. And I was just thinking about that. And, you know, good or bad, it's like you always kind of try to take things into consideration for what it was and what the moment was, brothers and sisters uniting and marching. And essentially they created a platform. That's something that they normally never had. They weren't in front of cameras that often. They weren't in a position to make the world see what they were dealing with and what they were going through. And that made me think about us today. Something that made that I really think that was awesome about the Black Lives Matter movement, I Can't Breathe movement, is that they allowed us to create a platform. And I think that's something we need to continue to do and we need to capitalize on. More than any other generation, our generation has the advantage of having social media. There's no middleman. We have the ultimate platform to take advantage of and show the world what our plight and what we're dealing with, and truly use that to create a better situation, and also to not necessarily exploit, but to shine light on the injustice that takes place in America. When you take into consideration what happened this past weekend in Madison with Tony Robinson, and the fact that this brother was suffering from, he had known mental health issues, things of that nature, and for what happened to him, nothing that should have never taken place. And it's like we have to take advantage of our platforms, the things that we have within social media. We need to stop posting fight videos and those negative ignorant images, and start showing us doing the positive things, us doing things that actually impact and mold and help our community. It's like we need to take control of the propaganda machine of things like Fox News and things of that nature. You know where Fox News gets majority of their ammunition? From social media. Stuff that we post thinking is funny. The Sharkeesha video came from social media. And Fox News ran that for over a year, just mocking us. You know what I mean? So they did that to take advantage of us and to make us look crazy, when that's not really who we are. We need to take advantage of that and learn something from our ancestors, learn something from the brothers and sisters that sacrificed a lot during the Selma March, and just kind of take advantage of the platforms that we have. We need to use the tools that we have, instead of allowing the tools that we have to be a crutch.
Absolutely, man. with that being said, I'll just leave it with this. You know, in the words of J. Cole, and I think it's so important right now, I just think you have to love yours. You know, love yours being love yourself and love your brothers and sisters to the point where you're willing to defend us against it all. When you see injustices happening against us, we have to stand up and fight for each other. And I don't mean physically fight. I mean fight in these spheres that we're operating in. With that being said, everybody, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next week right here, same time on TNJ Radio, Solution-Based Radio. Stick with us. We appreciate it. And as you all know, God is love. Peace.